Chapter 1. It was sunny in San Francisco, a fabulous condition. Raymond Shaw was not unaware of the beauty outside the hotel window, across from a mansion on the top of a hill. But he clutched the telephone like an osculatorium, and did not allow himself to think about what lay beyond that instant. In a saloon someplace, in a different bed, or anywhere. His lumpy sergeant's uniform was heaped on a chair. He stretched out on the rented bed wearing a new $120 dark blue dressing gown and waited for the telephone operator to complete the chain of calls to locate Ed Mavoli's father, somewhere in St. Louis. He knew he was doing the wrong thing. 2 years of Korean duty were 3 days behind him, and at the very least he should be spending his money in a taxicab to go up and down those hills in the sunshine. But he decided his mind must be bent, or that he was drunk with compassion, or something else improbable like that. Of all of the fathers, of all of the fallen, whom he had to call, owing to his endemic mopery, this one had to work nights, because by now it must be dark in St. Louis. He listened to the operator get through to the switchboard at the post-dispatch. He heard the switchboard tell her that Mavoli's father worked in the composing room. A man talked to a woman. There was silence. Raymond stared at his own large toe.
"Hello?"
A very high voice.
"Mr. Arthur Mavoli, please, long distance calling."
The steady rumble of working presses filled the background.
"This is him. Mr. Arthur Mavoli?" "Yeah, yeah." "Go ahead, please."
"Hello. Mr. Mavoli? This is Sergeant Shaw. I'm calling from San Francisco. I was in Eddie's outfit, Mr. Mavoli."
"My Ed's outfit?"
"Yes, sir."
"Ray Shaw?"
"Yes, sir."
"The Ray Shaw? Who won the medal of..."
"Yes, sir." Raymond cut him off in a louder voice. He felt like dropping the phone, the call, and the whole soggy, masochistic, suicidal thing in the wastebasket. Better yet, he should whack himself over the head with the goddamn phone. "You see, Mr. Mavoli, I have to, go to Washington, and I..."
"We know. We read all about it, and let me say with all my heart I got left that I am as proud of you, even though I never met you, as if it were Eddie, my own kid, my son."
"Mr. Mavoli," Raymond said rapidly, "I thought that if it was okay with you, maybe I could stop over in St. Louis on my way to Washington, you know? It occurred to me that you and Mrs. Mavoli might get some kind of peace out of it, some kind of relief if we talked a little bit about Eddie, you know? I thought it was the least I could do." There was a silence. Then Mr. Mavoli began to make a lot of slobbering sounds, so Raymond said roughly that he would wire when he knew what flight he would be on, and he hung up the phone and felt like an idiot. Like an angry man with a cane who pokes a hole through the floor of heaven and is scalded by the joy that pours down upon him. Raymond had a capacity for using satisfactions against himself. When he got off the plane at St. Louis Airport, he felt like running. He decided Mavoli's father must be that midget with the eyeglasses, like milk bottle bottoms, who is enjoying sweating so much. The man would be all over him like a charging elk in a minute.
"Hold it, hold it,"
the pimply press photographer said loudly. "Put it down," Raymond snarled in a voice which was even more unpleasant than his normal voice. All at once, the photographer was less sure of himself.
"What's the matter?"
he asked in bewilderment, because he lived at a time when only sex criminals and dope peddlers tried to refuse to have their pictures taken by the press. "I flew all the way in here to see Ed Mavoli's father," Raymond said, despising himself for throwing up such corn. "You want a picture? Go find him, because you ain't going to take one of me without he's in it." "Listen to that genuine bluff sergeant version of police verso," Raymond cried out to himself. "I am playing the authentic war buddy so deeply that I will have to mail in a royalty check for the stock rights. Look at that clown of a photographer trying to cope with phenomena. Any minute now he will realize that he is standing right beside Mavoli's father."
"Oh, sergeant," the girl said.
So then he knew who she was. She wasn't red-eyed and runny-nosed with grief for the dead hero, so she had to be the cub reporter who had been assigned to write the big local angle on the White House and the hero.
And he had probably written the lead for her with that sappy grandstand play.
I'm Ed's father, the sweat manufacturer said. It was December, for God's sake. What's with all the dew? I'm Arthur Mavoli. I'm sorry about this. I just happened to mention at the paper that you had called all the way from San Francisco and that you had offered to stop over and see Eddie's mother on the way to the White House. And the word somehow got upstairs to the city desk, and, well, that's the newspaper business, I guess.
Raymond took three steps forward, grasped Mr. Mavoli's hand, gripped his right forearm with his own left hand, transmitted the steely glance and the iron stare and the frozen fix. He felt like Captain Idiot in one of those space comic books, and the photographer got the picture and lost all interest in them. May I ask how old you are, Sergeant Shaw? The young chick said, notebook ready, pencil poised, as though she and Mavoli were about to give him a fitting. And he figured reflexively that this could be the first assignment she had ever gotten after years of journalism school and months of social notes from all over. He remembered his first assignment, and how he had feared the waffle-faced movie actor who had opened the door of the hotel suite wearing only pajama bottoms, with corny tattoos, like So Long Mabel, on each shoulder. Inside the suite, Raymond had managed to convey that he would just as soon have hit the man as talked to him, and he had said, "Give me the handout and we can save some time." The traveling press agent with the actor, a plump, bloodshot type whose glasses kept sliding down his nose, had said, "What handout?" He had snarled that maybe they would prefer it if he started out by asking what was the great man's hobby and what astrology sign he had been born under. It was hard to believe, but that man's face had been as pocked and welted as a waffle, yet he was one of the biggest names in the business, which gives an idea what those swine will do to kid the jerky public. The actor had said, "Are you scared, kid?" Then, after that, everything seemed to go okay. They got along like a bucket of chums. The point was, everybody had to start someplace. Although he felt like a slob himself for doing it, he asked Mr. Mavoli and the girl if they would have time to have a cup of coffee at the airport restaurant, because he was a newspaper man himself, and he knew that the little lady had a story to get. The little lady? That was overdoing it. He'd have to find a mirror and see if he had a wing collar on.
"You were?"
the girl said.
"Oh, Sergeant."
Mr. Mavoli said a cup of coffee would be fine with him, so they went inside. They sat down at a table in the coffee shop. The windows were steamy, business was very quiet, and unfortunately the waitress seemed to have nothing but time. They all ordered coffee, and Raymond thought he'd like to have a piece of pie, but he could not bring himself to decide what kind of pie. Did everybody have to look at him as though he were sick, because he couldn't set his taste buds in advance to be able to figure which flavor he would favor before he tasted it? Did the waitress just have to start out to recite, "We have peach pie and pump," and they just yell out, "Peach, peach, peach"? What was the sense of eating in a place where they gabbled the menu at you anyway? If a man were intelligent, and he sorted through the memories of past tastes, he could not only get exactly what he wanted sensually and with a flavor sensation, but he would probably be choosing something so chemically exact that it would benefit his entire body. But how could anyone achieve such a considerate, deliberate result as that, unless one were permitted to pore over a written menu?
"The prune pie is very good, sir," the waitress said.
He told her he'd take the prune pie, and he hated her in a hot, resentful flash because he did not want prune pie. He hated prune pie, and he had been maneuvered into ordering prune pie by a rube waitress who would probably slobber all over his shoes for a quarter tip.